Order you, but we have no time. He gave Langdon his keycard. You'll need this. You're not coming with us? Langdon asked. Bellamy shook his head. You'll never make it unless we split up. The most important thing is to keep that pyramid and capstone in safe hands. Langdon saw no other way out except the stairs back up to the reading room. And where are you going? I'll coax them into the stacks away from you, Bellamy said. It's all I can do to help you escape. Before Langdon could ask where he and Catherine were supposed to go, Bellamy was heaving a large crate of books off one of the conveyors.
Lie on the belt, Bellamy said. Keep your hands in.
Langdon stared. You cannot be serious. The conveyor belt extended a short distance, then disappeared into a dark hole in the wall. The opening looked large enough to permit passage of a crate of books, but not much more. Langdon glanced back longingly at the stacks.
Forget it, Bellamy said. The motion sensor lights will make it impossible to hide.
Thermal signature, a voice upstairs shouted. Flanks converge.
Catherine apparently had heard all she needed to hear. She climbed onto the conveyor belt, with her head only a few feet from the opening in the wall. She crossed her hands over her chest like a mummy in a sarcophagus. Langdon stood frozen.
Robert, Bellamy urged, if you won't do this for me, do it for Peter.
The voices upstairs sounded closer now. As if in a dream, Langdon moved to the conveyor. He slung his day bag onto the belt and then climbed on, placing his head at Catherine's feet. The hard rubber conveyor felt cold against his back. He stared at the ceiling and felt like a hospital patient preparing for insertion head first into an MRI machine.
Keep your phone on, Bellamy said. Someone will call soon and offer help. Trust him.
Someone will call? Langdon knew that Bellamy had been trying to reach someone with no luck and had left a message earlier. And only moments ago, as they hurried down the spiral staircase, Bellamy had tried one last time and gotten through, speaking very briefly in hushed tones, and then hanging up.
Follow the conveyor to the end, Bellamy said, and jump off quickly before you circle back. Use my keycard to get out.
Get out of where? Langdon demanded. But Bellamy was already pulling levers. All the different conveyors in the room hummed to life. Langdon felt himself jolt into motion, and the ceiling began moving overhead.
God save me.
As Langdon approached the opening in the wall, he looked back and saw Warren Bellamy race through the doorway into the stacks, closing the door behind him. An instant later, Langdon slid into the darkness, swallowed up by the library, just as a glowing red laser dot came dancing down the stairs. Chapter 60. The underpaid female security guard from Preferred Security double-checked the Kalorama Heights address on her call sheet.
This is it?
The gated driveway before her belonged to one of the neighborhood's largest and quietest estates, and so it seemed odd that 911 had just received an urgent call about it. As usual with unconfirmed call-ins, 911 had contacted the local alarm company before bothering the police. The guard often thought the alarm company's motto, "Your first line of defense," could just as easily have been false alarms, pranks, lost pets, and complaints from wacky neighbors. Tonight, as usual, the guard had arrived with no details about the specific concern. Above my pay grade. Her job was simply to show up with her yellow bubble light spinning, assess the property, and report anything unusual. Normally, something innocuous had tripped the house alarm, and she would use her override keys to reset it. This house, however, was silent. No alarm. From the road, everything looked dark and peaceful. The guard buzzed the intercom at the gate, but got no answer. She typed her override code to open the gate and pulled into the driveway. Leaving her engine running and her bubble light spinning, she walked up to the front door and rang the bell. No answer. She saw no lights and no movement. Reluctantly, following procedure, she flicked on her flashlight to begin her trek around the house to check the doors and windows for signs of break-in. As she rounded the corner, a black stretch limousine drove past the house, slowing for a moment before continuing on. Rubbernecking neighbors. Bit by bit, she made her way around the house but saw nothing out of place. The house was bigger than she had imagined, and by the time she reached the backyard, She was shivering from the cold. Obviously, there was nobody home. Dispatch, she called in on her radio. I'm on the Kalorama Heights call. Owners aren't home. No signs of trouble. Finished the perimeter check. No indication of an intruder. False alarm. Roger that, the dispatcher replied. Have a good night. The guard put her radio back on her belt and began retracing her steps, eager to get back to the warmth of her vehicle. As she did so, however, she spotted something she had missed earlier. A tiny speck of bluish light on the back of the house. Puzzled, she walked over to it, now seeing the source. A low transom window, apparently to the home's basement. The glass of the window had been blacked out, coated on the inside with an opaque paint. Some kind of darkroom, maybe? The bluish glow she had seen was emanating through a tiny spot on the window where the black paint had started to peel. She crouched down, trying to peer through, but she couldn't see much through the tiny opening. She tapped on the glass, wondering if maybe someone was working down there. Hello? She shouted. There was no answer, but as she knocked on the window, the paint chip suddenly detached and fell off, affording her a more complete view. She leaned in, nearly pressing her face to the window as she scanned the basement. Instantly, she wished she hadn't. What in the name of God? Transfixed, she remained crouched there for a moment, staring in abject horror at the scene before her. Finally, trembling, the guard groped for the radio on her belt. She never found it. A sizzling pair of taser prongs slammed into the back of her neck, and a searing pain shot through her body. Her muscles seized, and she pitched forward, unable even to close her eyes, before her face hit the cold ground. Chapter 61. Tonight was not the first time Warren Bellamy had been blindfolded. Like all of his Masonic brothers, he had worn the ritual hoodwink during his ascent to the upper echelons of Masonry. That, however, had taken place among trusted friends. Tonight was different. These rough-handed men had bound him, placed a bag on his head, and were now marching him through the library stacks. The agents had physically threatened Bellamy and demanded to know the whereabouts of Robert Langdon. Knowing his aging body couldn't take much punishment, Bellamy had told his lie quickly.
Langdon never came down here with me, he had said, gasping for air. I told him to go up to the balcony and hide behind the Moses statue, but I don't know where he is now.
The story apparently had been convincing, because two of the agents had run off in pursuit. Now the remaining two agents were marching him in.